Hey, listeners, we're nearing the end of our 15th anniversary fundraising campaign, and we need your help to meet our goal. This campaign offers you a chance to win a unique food and music experience in one of the most exciting cities in America. Here's how it works. Donate to HRN and you'll be entered to win dinner for two and two tickets to a concert in one of eight amazing cities: New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Nashville, Las Vegas, Charleston, Ardmore, Pennsylvania, and Asheville. All donations support our work educating food system storytellers. And when you donate, you can choose one of those cities and you'll be entered to win dinner and two tickets to a show. So help us reach our goal and enter to win dinner and a show in the city of your choice. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15. Thank you.
Today's program has been brought to you by greatbrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, and welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Mary Izette. My co-host Chris Kuzmi is a little delayed thanks to a train issue, but will be with us shortly. And tonight, we're going to head straight into a pre-recorded interview that Chris and I did at Belgian Comes to Cooperstown at Brewery Omegang earlier this summer in Cooperstown, New York. So this was a private tasting, actually, with Michael McManus and amazing guy who's the innovation manager at Brewery Omegang, and he's talking to us about some of the new beers that they have been developed and will be out soon. So let's tune in to Michael McManus.
Three or four beers. This first beer is what will be our spring seasonal 2014.
Is a Grisette.
So Grisette is a low ABV saison. Was traditionally marketed to miners, coal and stone miners.
Miners.
Not young people.
Let's be clear.
So our version is fermented with a classic saison yeast. It is not our house yeast. If you're familiar with our beers, that will be apparent. It's spiced with a little bit of pink peppercorn and orange peel. So, very drinkable beer for spring. This will fit in our seasonal rotation between Hatteration and Florida Houblon. So it's kind of an antidote to winter beers. The name is to be determined. We're just calling it Grisette from now on, which is the style. So Grisette means little gray in French, and that the name may have referred to the women who served beer to the men as they exited the mine. I mean, there's a lot of these romantic stories in brewing, and some of them are true.
What did you do to the peppercorn in Orchard?
What's that?
When was it spiced with the peppercorn?
About three quarters of the way through the boil, so it's a light. Pink peppercorns are fruity, as well as having some heat, so they've got a really nice fruitiness, which blends well with the yeast.
What were, did you have some challenges using the saison yeast instead of your house yeast, or did you have to change things up?
Well, I mean, we explored a couple different yeast strains for this beer. This is a little cleaner than our house yeast, which makes a lower ABV beer a bit more drinkable. Mm-hmm. It attenuates really well, so this beer is super dry.
Is it more French or Belgian?
Saisons are a northern French, southern Belgian beer, so yes.
So I guess from like a perspective,
yeah.
I've used the
So like French,
French
saison yeast are super clean.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So this is not as clean. Yeah. So I mean, it's got a fruitiness. It's just to me, it's like pear, kind of apple-y. Whereas our yeast is like more banana, ripe fruit. Name, it maybe end up being grisette, but you know, who knows at this point.
Yeah.
That's less my deal.
The grisette.
This next beer is Hop House.
Hold on.
So this is a beer that will replace BPA in our year-round lineup. We've reached this after our exploration and evolution of like hoppy Belgian beers, so that began with BPA. Florida Gouvlon's a beer we worked on for a while, trying to find a nice, well-balanced, but pop-forward Belgian beer, which is kind of tricky because of what Belgian yeast brings to the table.
Yep.
So there's a reason that IPAs or American IPAs use clean yeast strains, and that's because it lets the hops shine. So it's a little bit more of a challenge to brew a drinkable, sessionable, hop-forward Belgian beer that's not cloying. So we have been talking internally about the fact that BPA could use some more hops. So that's what we did. There are three hop varieties in the kettle and three dry hop varieties for this beer. It leans very heavily on late addition and dry hopping. So the bitterness is enhanced. BPA was about 30. This is just over 50. But most of the IBUs come from late addition hopping. So I get a lot of tropical fruit, citrus, a little bit of pine.
And this is done with a house yeast?
This is our house yeast. Yeah, so I mean, I can't really conceive of us doing a year-round beer that doesn't include our house yeast.
Yeah.
It's important to have that house character for us.
So I think that's something interesting about this is because this is a very different yeast characteristic than, say, one of the other beers. Right? But it's the same yeast?
It's the same yeast.
And so that's so you're manipulating this yeast with either temperature or aeration?
Temperature, aeration. Yeah. Temperature, pressure, aeration, pitch rate. So generally anything that encourages yeast growth is going to get you a more estery beer, with the exception of oxygen. So you increase the oxygen rate, you encourage yeast growth, but you don't necessarily get more esters. But the general rule is more yeast growth, more esters. Yeah, some weird things have happened too. Like, you know, we fermented our house yeast at, like, what normally we dump a batch if it got that hot, just to see what happens. And so you get weird results because sometimes those like hot fermented beers can end up clean.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of weird. When we did Barrier Relief, that beer with Barrier Brewery Company.
Yeah.
We fermented a house yeast, like that was a Belgian IPA. Really warm, and it was had a pretty clean yeast character that we were like blown away by.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When's the BPA on the out?
So I don't know exactly how it'll phase in this beer, but we're shooting for getting it out there at least in some markets November, December. But I'm not exactly the person to talk to about that.
Would it be an instant replacement?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
As a staff brewer, I created BPA years ago, so it's you know. Not at all. I mean, I can't get emotional about any of these beers. Unless I've had too much to drink.
Yeah. Then you can get emotional.
Then you can get emotional.
But if you drank up this one, which is free.
So Goldings, Steering Goldings are in there. But one of the marketing guys will probably tell everybody what's in this beer. But I'm not going to be the guy to do that.
Understandable.
That's great.
And then we're going to have Take the Black. This is you can see the label online. Yeah, but this is just a dummy bottle.
So. Yeah, no problem.
So this is a 7% stout. A pretty complex malt profile. This is hopped with Columbus and Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer for aroma and flavor. And then spiced with Sarnese licorice root. There's a misconception about licorice root. Sarnese tastes like licorice, smells like licorice. Licorice root does not.
Interesting. What does it add?
The licorice, it adds like a woody quality. And for me...
Is it the seeds that are...
It's just the pieces, wood, it's...
No, I mean the seeds, what's licorice?
Yeah, I guess it is, because, when you use licorice, like the...
It's like ground seed and stuff.
Yeah, because you get it out of the pod.
Yeah.
So this... to me, Northern Brewer has like a woody, minty quality. And so, I just thought of licorice root when we decided on those hops. Complex malt profile, so it's pills, caramel malt, chocolate malt, roasted malt, midnight wheat. There's a lot going on in this beer. But the first beer, obviously, we wanted something that was worthy of the Elmgang name, something we were proud of. It was a thoroughly Belgian beer, but it was also easy to drink. And I love that beer I don't think it was what people were expecting, maybe, from the first beer. Like, everybody wanted us to make a stout right out of the gate. But, you don't want to bonk people over the head who aren't used to Belgian beer or our beer that might be more complex than what they normally drink. But I think that first beer is like a really nice food beer. It's versatile. It's easy to drink. That being said, this was a fun beer to brew, for sure. And it was nice to have a lot of different versions of it lying around, because it was colder when we were brewing this initially. definitely more complex. The theme of this beer kind of was the Night's Watch. So that's what we thought about when we were...
So when it comes to this kind of marketing thing, you get a concept and you get to play with it, or is this kind of like you have a catalog of things that you wish you were funded and then you bring it forward?
Well, we get the way we develop all of our beers here is we come up with a concept, and that drives the liquid, the marketing, and the name, pretty much. So, not to say we haven't brewed something just to brew that style, but it helps to work within a box sometimes. So you're kind of driven creatively. This name was, we come up with the name collaboratively, but okay. HBO obviously has to approve the name. So brewing, they've been absolutely wonderful. Like, they just approve the beer when we're done brewing it. That hasn't been a problem. They're not like telling us to add more hops or anything there. So it's been, from that aspect, it's been great. The whole relationship has been really good. But yeah, so this beer was, we wanted, it's a little more challenging for sure. But for a stout, it's well attenuated. The body is not too heavy, and that's because of the Belgian yeast. And we added, sugar to lighten the body. This is a production batch. This isn't a pilot batch. So the Grisette and the Hop House were both final pilot batches.
That's under one barrel.
Yeah. Yep. And this is a production batch.
It's a nice minty winter.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cold. It's great.
We're just talking about the brewers kind of somewhat ignored nowadays.
Yeah.
By a lot of the brewing industry, and it's really lovely.
A lot of those. A lot of the older, like, American hops. Mm-hmm. Cluster, which is like a pretty elegant dual-purpose hop. Not a lot of people use. We're doing this hop variety trial up here with Cornell University. So that's been really cool. So we're doing, there's 15 different varieties up there. We'll never make a dime off this project. Very much the opposite.
What university is?
Cornell.
Yeah. So Steve Miller, who is the hop specialist in New York State, who's out of Cornell Cooperative Extension, Madison County. His job is just to help hop farmers get the industry moving. These are first year. We're just trying to see what does well in the area and then encourage and help farmers in the area to grow more hops that, you know, we can eventually use. So we plan on doing 100% New York State hop beer next year.
Is there a historical push on this too, since it was such a big...
Yeah, I mean, this is a former hop farm.
Yeah.
It's the farms out here are in their infant stages, so, you know, big hop farms in New York State are 5 acres. Small hop farms in the Pacific Northwest are 700 acres.
Yeah.
What is really lacking in the Northeast is, like, proper processing capability. There are not a lot of people pelletizing hops. They might not necessarily be tested in a way that we feel comfortable using them.
But the soil pH and everything else is... It's on par with...
We had to add lime up there to adjust the pH. I mean,
and the cloud coverage and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they need a lot of sun. They need a lot of water. So this yard up here gets hit with water for 2 hour spurts every 6 hours around the clock. They use a tremendous amount of water.
I took a walk up there, and some of them are doing really well.
Some of them are doing really well.
Varieties are doing just excellent.
Some of the Newport up here are doing really well. Northern Brewer seemed to be doing pretty good. It's kind of deceiving because we put plants in. We didn't put any rhizomes, so they're all from a clean plant network in Washington State. Some of the plants had better growth. Yeah, to begin with. Thankfully, all the hops up here have new growth and seem to be. I just want to get root growth this year so they overwinter and we get. Like, I'll be more nervous about this next spring. Yeah.
How many varieties are you guys growing up there?
There's 15 up there now, and we're going to add at least 6 next year. Yeah.
Does Cornell bring any technology into this?
Well, they helped us source all the plants and the trellis design. Steve Miller helped us out with.
Yeah. Is there any genetic modification?
No.
Talks.
No, because
it's cloned anyway.
Yeah, that's the way hops are produced from cuttings. So it's just like willow trees. If you cut off a willow branch, stick it in the ground, it'll grow. They're hardy plants. But there's a, you know, obviously, I mean, I'm no farmer, but there's like, I'm discovering a lot of shit can go wrong. I mean, like the weather. So it rained, we got so much rain this spring, and then it was like 90 degrees for 3 weeks straight. So that wasn't ideal. So that's why we got them in late.
And thanks to Mike McManus. We'll be back shortly with another small interview talking about Oma Gang's 100% Brett fermented beer with Mike McManus. Stay tuned.
Want to taste the finest beer and spirits from over 125 breweries and 30 distilleries? The Craft Experience, the most exclusive craft and spirit tasting event in New York, hosted by great brewers, is available to the public for the first time ever. Join your fellow beer and spirit enthusiasts on Wednesday, November 13th in Manhattan to mingle with the superstars of the craft beverage world. Tickets are available now at www.thecraftexp.com.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. We are currently in the midst of listening to a tasting that we did, that Chris and I did earlier this summer at Brewery Omegang with Mike McManus. So we're going to hear him talking about their 100% Brett beer.
So this is Wild at Heart. This is a beer that 100% Brettanomyces fermentation in primary. So when you think about Brett beers, generally you think horse blanket, goaty, dry barnyard flavors. And we've done that before with Beer to Mars and Omageddon, some beers we made. I think the last time we made those was 2008. But in secondary, when Brett is stressed, it produces those signature wild flavors. So this beer is arguably more wild because it's the entire primary fermentation takes place with Brett. But this beer doesn't exhibit those characters that you normally think of. It's very fruity, it's clean, super tropical. So the Brett yeast strain we used does exhibit some tropical character like pineapple, mango, passion fruit. So we encourage that with the use of some hop varieties from New Zealand and Australia, Motueka and Topaz, which have lemon, lime, a little bit of passion fruit. So yeah, this is 8%. We're trying to maintain that fruity character in the bottle as well. So we'll bottle condition this with house yeast instead of Brett, because in secondary, that, you know, when the bread is stressed, it's under pressure, it's got to consume those complex sugars, so it'll behave a little differently. But I've aged some of this beer warm in the keg, and it hasn't changed much. It's gotten a little more tart. There is some tartness. So this beer's got some oats, because Brett beers can be kind of thin in body. And so that adds to the mouthfeel and the body. We try to brew this with lower oxygen levels in the wort initially, because Brett can produce acetic acid when exposed to a bunch of oxygen. I mean, I think it would be probably pretty hard to overdo it and get like a really acetic beer, but this doesn't have, to me, this has like almost no acetic character.
So when you are using Brett as your primary, are you treating it differently than you would your house yeast, or?
And we're being a lot more careful.
I can imagine.
Yeah. No. So, we will, in the future, we'll have dedicated Brett tanks, but like a tank like this that has Brett in it, we'll get, when it's empty, it'll get field stripped. So every single gasket, every piece of, you know, it'll, and then we'll do like a super aggressive CIP cycle on this and make sure everything's dead. I mean, Brett dies just like any other yeast, but smaller colonies can hold on.
And did you find like a, because I know that we've talked to brewers that have used Brett as primary before, there's a longer lag time. Did you find any, that was a difference? Or
there's a longer lag time. I mean, we grew it up in one of the tanks out here.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a number of things to try to get that fermentation to kick off as fast as we could and get a nice, vigorous, clean fermentation. One of those things was, you know, propagated to 10 hectoliters before we even did this.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was I myself propagated some of the same lot of yeast prior to brewing that 10 hectoliters to get some of that yeast alcohol tolerant first.
Okay.
So you'll see the second generation takes off a lot more quickly. So when we pitched that, when that propagation was done and we filled up that tank with the first brew to grow up that yeast before we transfer it in here and step it up again,
mm-hmm.
I pitched in alcohol tolerant yeast we knew that was already in vigorous.
Ready to go.
Yeah. So you do, in that respect, you have to treat a little differently. I mean, that's an insurance policy.
Yeah. I think that's a concern that pro brewers and home brewers have, besides the worry of contamination, but also you do have to treat it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
So. Yes, it's amazing. Yeah.
All right, so thanks again to Michael McManus at Omegang Brewery, at Brewery Omegang, and everybody who set us up at Brewery Omegang with that wonderful tasting. I look forward to tasting these beers when they come out commercially from Brewery Omegang. Also, a huge thanks to Ty Trimble and Chris Pagnotta. They were with us on that tasting, and they have provided some of the questions in that interview as well. So we're going to go straight to a question. So I recently got an email from Karen Singh from New Delhi, India, and she had read my Fermenting on the Flipside presentation that I did at the National Homebrewers Conference this summer. It's up on the American Homebrewers Association website if you're a member. And she is asking, is there a way to make short mead with milk kefir, whey, or ginger bug? We do not have easy access to brewing yeast in India. So that's a tricky one. I think that you can make a short mead. Honey can definitely be used as a sweetener in any of those fermentations. Here's the only caveat. Honey has some antibacterial properties, first of all. And it could be a little bit tougher on cultures that are used to fermenting sugar as some of the fermented soda beverages are used to. They're very adapted to these easily fermentable basic sugars. And so I think if you're going to use milk kefir grains, we did a show earlier this year with Angela Davis speaking about milk kefir grains. First of all, milk kefir grains are really not designed to be used with water kefir, but I have never had experience with using them. But I did a little bit of research, and some people have successfully used milk kefir grains to ferment water kefir with honey. I would think that you'd want to make sure that your milk kefir grains are really strong and healthy. Go ahead and try a small batch of a honey-based beverage, and then go ahead and go back to the milk kefir for the next 1, 2, or 3 cycles, something like that, until you just don't want to endanger the health of your grains. Same thing with whey or ginger bug. You know what? I would do some experiments. Ginger bug, I definitely go ahead and... So a ginger bug you can actually make yourself with fresh ginger, sugar, and water. Basically, you want some fresh organic ginger. Just go ahead and chop it up, you know, include the peel. Add that to about 2 cups of dechlorinated water and then a tablespoon of sugar. And again, I would use something with minerals. Like if you were going to use a plain white sugar, I like organic white sugar personally because it's very easy to get a starter. But I always supplement with either a pinch of of brown sugar or a teeny bit of molasses or even some sea salt. Like I use pink Himalayan sea salt at home just because then it gives you some nutrients to that developing yeast and bacteria culture. So again, you would go ahead and get that started. You're going to get some bubble, you know, you'll start to notice bubbling in your ginger bug. You can go ahead and add a little bit more ginger, water, and sugar every day or two just to kind of keep the culture going. You can also let it sit there. I found that when I'm using this technique, if you let it sit without supplementing it, you'll often get a more lactic culture. You definitely get more of a tart, sour end, but it's completely dependent. I think that you're incorporating a lot of your natural yeast and bacteria colonies around your house. I do this and I just put some cheesecloth on the top with a rubber band. So you could definitely do that. Again, with the whey culture, you would just strain whey from your yogurt and culture that with some sugar and water. So I think any of these cultures, if you have a nice strong culture, go ahead and strain off some of that starter liquid and add that to a honey and water mixture. Again, I would use some kind of nutrient, either a yeast nutrient or a sea salt or maybe a little bit of molasses, something that has some vitamins and minerals that can, you know, help support that culture of yeast and bacteria. You're obviously not going to get the same flavor as a short mead that you're fermenting with champagne yeast or even ale yeast or wine yeast, but I think you could get a really interesting honey-based beverage that would be very delicious. The other thing is you can do, so kombucha is, again, it's a SCOBY like kefir is. It's a, bacteria yeast culture like all of these fermented soda things, cultures that I'm talking about right now. But there is a particular type of kombucha SCOBY that's called, I believe it's called a June, and I haven't used it yet, but it has been... It's used to ferment a honey water mixture or honey, you know, water tea mixture instead of a sugar-based tea mixture. So you can find these over the internet. I know that Kombucha Brooklyn here in Brooklyn also sells them. So I think that would be worth a try if you can get your hands on one of those and you can do, you know, if you really want a honey beverage, you could get your hands on one of those and make some nice honey kombucha. The other request that we got, that Chris and I got recently, is for doing, from somebody who's doing root beer. So Eric McClellan wrote us and he says, I love your show. I got into it after hearing Chris on Science Friday. I started working on brewing root beer at home a few months back, and I finally started getting a good result. I've been able to peripherally take some pointers from you guys when you talk about concepts behind brewing beer, but it'd be really great if you guys did a show on homebrewing root beer, maybe even a show on soda with ginger ale too. I've been using a generic ale yeast for my brew, and I'm not sure if there are better options for me. Hearing you talk about all the specialty strains of yeast for beer sounds great. Do you think any of these strains would translate over well into a root beer recipe? Absolutely, Eric. I think the only thing we have to think about, a couple weeks ago we had Drew Beecham on talking about cider, and you know, he says that you can use a lot of the different types of beer yeast, but you're not going to get the same compounds that you might expect when using them with a malted barley-based or a wheat-based wort, because you have to have certain compounds in your base beverage that can be converted to other compounds like esters and phenols. So you can't just make esters and phenols out of, you know, these kind of aroma and flavor compounds that you're expecting from a certain yeast, like a Belgian yeast, for instance. You can't get those out of nothing. So you definitely have to have certain compounds to start with. So I think you're not necessarily going to get the same kind of effect or even range of flavors. I've only done ginger ale, fermented ginger ale and root beer a few times, but this is definitely inspiring me to start some new batches. So I'm definitely going to start some very small ginger ale and root beer batches and do some yeast experiments. I think a clean ale yeast is really nice. I think actually it might be fun to do a ginger ale with champagne yeast. That's going to be extremely clean, and you could have some fun with it. Maybe you could do a spicier ginger beer with jalapeno or even habanero, and add some other flavors into it. But it would be interesting to try to use, you know, even some white wine yeast to go with it. And then again, some of the yeast that were in the cider experiment that we talked with Chris Banks about a few months ago and has now been published in the most recent issue of Zymergy, they got very different flavors from their using different beer yeast. So it might be fun to try something like an Edinburgh yeast with a ginger or root beer. But anyway, I'm definitely interested in pursuing that experiment. I'm going to get some smaller batches going in the next week or two, and we will have definitely will have a show on fermented ginger ale and root beer and other beverages. Also, we'd love to hear from you. If you guys out there are fermenting ginger ales or root beers or sassafras or birch beers or whatever, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us at fermentaboutit@gmail.com. That's all we have for tonight. Chris will be back next week, and we're going to have more Brettanomyces fun. We're going to have Anthony and Rob from the Brewery and Planning Transmitter Brewing here in Brooklyn. So please tune in next Monday, 7 p.m. to Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. Good night.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat & 3.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears.
and I hope you saved a little room for dessert.